Get on the phone and get in the zone. 888-463-6748. That's 888-GO-FOR-IT. TalkZone.com.
Welcome back to the Dave Valm Show on TalkZone.com. Internet talk radio. Good stuff. 1-888-463-6748 is our phone number. Dr. Michael Zay is our guest, a futurist, a lot of background, sociology, trend explainer, and let's get to the phones. Carl, you're on the Dave Baum Show. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Dave. I was kind of curious about the population trends in the U.S. and where you think those are going over the next, say, 100 years or so, because it seems like right now there's a pretty big transition with Hispanic populations are growing really fast and that kind of thing.
Michael, good question.
Yeah, well, the projection is that we're going to reach, we just reached 300 million in 2006, and we should reach, based on replacement fertility rates, even just legal immigration, we should reach 400 million around 2043, I think was the date that I've seen most of the census claims. So it seems like a lot, except going from 200 to 300, as you know, is a 50% increase. This would only be a 33% increase. And we're definitely moving with that. And I always point out when people talk about that 400 million mark that that's based on using death rates as they exist today. With any major change or improvement in any of those fields that we discussed, genetic engineering, et cetera, those death rates, you can throw those death rate numbers out the window, which means that more people will be living longer, which means that we'd reach 400 million probably a lot quicker.
Carl, follow up?
Well, I guess my question was maybe a little different. I wasn't really talking about total population so much as just the general complexion of the U.S. in terms of the balance of different ethnic groups.
Ethnics. Well, all right, based upon...
Right. Well, based upon reproduction and that, the figures have been discussed a lot. Right now we're about 65-70% what they call white Caucasian. That will change to slightly over 50%. That's non-Hispanic white, and then Hispanics will be making up around 20-some-odd percent. African-Americans will still hold around their 12% rate, and Asians will go up significantly from where they are. The big increase will be in the proportion of the population that's what they're calling non-Hispanic white. However, I want to just point out that, and because I'm a college professor and you kind of get a, the only reason I mention that is I see who's coming through the colleges and, certainly out here in New Jersey, you see a lot of the first, second, third generation Hispanics coming through here. It seems that a lot of those projections are based on the fact that they think there will still be a unitary group called non-Hispanic white. But there's going to be a lot of marrying between and procreating between those groups.
Uh-huh.
So I think those
that changes things
are going to be hard to prove and hard to maintain. I think there's going to be I don't think it's going to be as radical a change as they keep discussing at this point, because by the third generation, one is not you're not a new immigrant anymore. You're integrated into the society. And you're into marrying, and I think a lot of the offspring will be harder to, I'm sure they will classify.
Harder to identify.
I don't think it's going to be a clean classification as they think it's going to be, as neat and as predictable as they think. So, that's what I think. When you say the changing nature, there will be a change.
Mm-hmm. Carl, thanks very much for your call. I want to go back to the robotics for a moment. From a philosophical point of view, question basically is, how far is too far? And let me amplify. We were talking about what's being done with robots today in Japan and other parts of the world. I know from some reading that roboticists have been working on emulation of the brain and the body and muscles and joints. We've also been talking about the evolution of robots, and someday people are going to be able to buy them. Humans are going to be able to buy robots as sex partners, as members of families. My question, based upon that, if we can assume that's probably going to happen, how far is too far from this vantage point? Seems to me that all of this connotes a diminishing of interpersonal relationships.
Well, if it does it connote it, or is it brought on by the lack? In other words, if I import somebody into my family, is that because we're not procreating?
Well, I'm looking at today and my subjective opinion about relationships today. More technological in talking to you and me. We don't look at each other when we talk. There are more ways to communicate today that have nothing to do with looking at each other. I see this only getting worse. And so what I'm kind of wondering is, when we get to that stage of the robots being used in, you name it, you know better than me, how far is too far in getting away from people relating to other
well,
people?
Well, you bring up a good point, because you, the point that I that I'd like to just start with is the fact that we're, in a sense, almost there in terms of the way that people, we have a generation that's growing up not really even interrelating with people, real people. They think they're interrelating by going into a chat room. I was at a conference recently, and one of the discussants was from MTV, and MTV just did a survey on, you know, the five different types of personalities of people 14 to 19 or something. You know, it's a marketing survey.
Uh-huh.
But one of the things they talked about is this kind of heavy relationship that these people have with technology, these young people. And we all know that, but he said something that he was talking about how much they depend on, you know, everything from MySpace to Facebook to all these mechanical methods of finding, quote-unquote, friends. And he had a quote that stuck with me where somebody they were interviewing, one of the young people, said, "I've never met my best friend." And it struck me.
It took
me a while to realize what the person was saying. They had developed an extremely personal relationship with someone, or they thought it was a personal relationship with someone, who they've never met. And this person is the one person they can talk to, confide in, etc. Well, you know, a lot of people would look at that and say, so what? Well, there's a difference between working mechanically, you know, in cyber world and working in the real world. I mean, there really are no obligations for my relationship with this person halfway across the world. I don't have to be at a certain place. I don't have to interact with them. I don't really even have to do things with them except have this ongoing cyber chit-chat with them, in which I'm totally comfortable. We're not, anyone who thinks that relationships involve give and take, involve obligations, responsibilities, etc. Now, a lot of people listening to this are probably saying, no, I have the same type of relationship I could in the real world, in cyber world. I don't agree with that. And you said something interesting, that you think that maybe robotics or relationships with robots might be an extension of this type of mechanical cyber relationship, non-interpersonal relationship. It could actually be that, but I'm telling you, if we actually had robots that were very lifelike and were so lifelike that they seemed like people and were nowhere near that, somebody who could learn my likes and dislikes, somebody who could react towards me, somebody who physically felt like a human being when I shook hands with them or had other interactions with them physically, I would say that a person who might be avoiding those types of relationships with real people would probably avoid relationships with that type of robot.
Oh.
I think. Because if it's that real, and that's your premise, right? It's that
uh-huh.
It seems like a real person.
It's a surrogate person.
Maybe I can turn the person this thing's switch off at the end, but after a while, do I really want to do that? Because if it's that lifelike, when I turn it back on, it's going to ask me why I turned it off. Is there something I did that offended you?
Wow.
You know, so, and we're assuming that if it's that lifelike, it's going to start having likes and dislikes, and I'm going to have to start adapting some of my behavior to its, his
uh-huh.
her behavior.
Uh-huh.
And those are all the reasons that I avoid relationships in the first place, the person might think. What did you give me here? What kind of present was this?
Wow.
I'm going back on the web. I couldn't say this on an internet
I've show. Never met my best friend. Man.
I know, it's mind-boggling. That's when I dropped my pen.
Well, what it says to me, in addition to telling the story, Michael, it also says to me that complexity is growing much faster than our expertise.
Outdistancing us in ways. Well, it probably always was that way, and I guess we adapted. We adapt to technology, then we try to adapt it to our own uses and what we can actually stand, you know, what we can actually live with. But you're right. I mean, if we look at the technologies, we weren't even ready for what the automobile did to everything from sex relations to the invention of the suburb. We were certainly not ready for that. And it's interesting that a lot of futurists in the late 19th century, goes to show you where futurists are, a lot of the futurists back then, they were talking about all of the improvements and that were taking place and electricity and all of that. The car kind of developed under the radar. It's not that they didn't know it was there, but, you know, a lot of people thought it was a toy or it was just an enhanced horse and carriage.
Uh-huh.
You know, we've traveled before. We've been on the rail. We've had railroads.
No big deal.
And then suddenly, you find that we are filling in parts of our geographic region that we never thought we could. People living miles and miles away from cities and still working there. Suddenly, it was really hard to chaperone your son's daughters.
Yeah. Well,
it just had a tremendous and just the concept of what the having this powerful engine at your bestowal, at your behest, and to do what you want certainly starts to make everyone feel they're equal to everyone else, that they're as good as any. I can go as fast as somebody 10 times richer than I am. I mean, look at this. You know, I can outdistance them. It changed the human, the way that we saw ourselves and the way that we saw others, and nobody was ready for that. So if we weren't ready for the car, you can imagine what robotics.
Wow. Michael, I want to thank you for a fascinating conversation. I'd like to do it again somewhere down the road. We can pick up where we left off and peer into the future and see what you look at then. Would we be able to do that?
You got it.
Thanks very much. I appreciate you being on the show.
And thank you.
Dr. Michael Zay, The Dave Baum Show, TalkZone.com. We've reached the end zone on TalkZone. Thanks to Chris Whitting, our producer. Dave Olson, our engineer. I'm Dave Baum. Till the next time, Mama, get the coffee ready. The kid's on his way.
You've been listening to The Dave Baum Show with today's compelling talk radio. Be sure to join Dave again for more fascinating and knowledgeable guests, stimulating conversation, and your phone calls on the TalkZone phone lines. The Dave Baum Show, right here on TalkZone.com.